Interestingly enough, our topic of the day on Wells Tech is live streaming video. We know a little bit about that, but we're going to write another chapter in our book and talk about some of the considerations for what actually do you want to stream and some of the technical ins and outs of doing live streaming. We have plenty of listener feedback. We have some great picks, all that and more. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. You are watching the Wells Tech podcast, or you may be listening, and if you're doing either one of those, it's episode 298, recorded on Tuesday, July 16th, 2013. Wells Tech's a show about technology and ministry and where those two meet, and we talk about all kinds of things related to church and school kinds of technologies, and helping me do that each week, each and every week for 298 of them. Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. And I guess I should offer you a congratulations this morning. I saw you on my Wells Connection this Sunday at church.
Yes.
You're famous.
My 15 seconds of fame, yes.
Yeah.
At least in the small Wells circles that we have, yes. No, it was great. We had an opportunity to be featured, and you too, on the Wells Connection. The month of July was featuring technology in the Synod. So it wasn't just you and I and the Wells Tech podcast, although that was presented there. It was the Wells mobile app. It was the work that we're doing with multi-language publications, with Forward in Christ, which is celebrating a big anniversary here. And they're going digital as well. So lots of things moving forward. I wouldn't say we're on the cutting edge ever, but that's okay. I think we're trying to figure out technology as we go along and make it fit where it makes sense. And we're trying to be good stewards of the resources. So that was kind of fun. And Steve Betcher, who does all the work for Wells Connection, Sally, you know him as well. Just as an incredible talent. They do other things as well, other than the Wells Connection, and always in a very professional way. And they make people look good, even people like me. So.
Yeah, I had to do full disclaimer at my church when it played this Sunday and say, you know, yeah, we do this podcast, but we always say we have a face for radio. So,
that's,
you know,
right.
Take it for what it is. But yeah, it was a big thrill for me to be able to join you for that and just to get the word out even more. Hopefully our Wells Tech
part community
will grow. And
yeah, absolutely.
That would be great. So
we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that all of our viewers and listeners shouldn't be telling their friends themselves either. So
that's right. A little guerrilla marketing on your part.
That's so. Right. The more the merrier.
Definitely.
And that's the best part about this whole thing, Sally, is just meeting the people that are viewers and listeners. And that's pretty cool. Wherever we go, I'm sure I'll run across a few. It's in a convention now too. So.
Mm-hmm. Senate convention's coming up, and with that, our 300th episode is right around the corner, Martin. I'm looking forward to celebrating with you in person live from the Senate convention floor in just, 2 weeks from today?
Yep. Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have a fresh new look to our logo, to some new music, just freshen things up a little bit for episode 300, and some cool interviews I think we'll have on the convention floor.
Yep, looking forward to it. But we can't talk about 300 unless we get 298 and 299 out of the way. And those two shows are dedicated to our summer topic of church and school website content. We're writing an ebook together. We're putting together a lot of great resources to help people know what to put on their website. The hardest part of your digital face to your congregation or school is actually the content that belongs out on the web. And so we wanted to dedicate this summer to giving you ideas for that. Today's topic is live streaming video, a very popular component of many church and school websites these days.
Yep. And Sally, I know when we were writing this and when we were planning the show, it was very difficult to stay away from the technology itself, since that is a question we get a lot. How and what is the best way to do live streaming? But So we are going to do that. You know, we talk about that in other contexts, but for this show, we're just talking really about what and the content of live streaming. And there's plenty to talk about there.
Definitely. I think a good place to start is kind of to look at each individual congregation or school and evaluate whether live streaming is actually for you. I know it's a popular thing to do, but maybe not the best thing to jump into without some serious thought behind it. Mm-hmm. There are tools available. And I think right off the bat, you'll find there are tools available, but there are advertising connected with many of those tools. So easy to get started, but you have no control of what kind of pop-up ads are coming up in the middle of your sermon.
And some of them can be very unfortunate.
Yeah, yes. Definitely. If you want to do it well, you probably want to do it advertising free. So you need to evaluate whether you have the financial resources to do the advertising free route, which is, can be costly. So thinking through some of those components of it before you even get started is probably a good place to spend some time.
Yep. And just the software itself is only a small portion. To do it well and to do it with quality takes a lot of production know-how and maybe even some dollars. So don't think that you can just pull out the family camcorder and the onboard microphone or Mr. Microphone and expect to get a decent production. There are some considerations there with lighting, with camera angles. The audio is extremely, extremely important. So if people can put up with, marginal YouTube-ish quality video, but if the audio isn't clean, people are going to tune out within a couple seconds. So make sure that you've got good audio coming in, that maybe you're tapping into the sound system at whatever venue you're at, whether that's a worship service or a Bible class or whatever. Don't count on the onboard whatever to just pick up clean audio. And then you also have some considerations if it's not a worship service. Let's say it's a Bible class like you guys do, Sally. How do you capture the audience participation, which is obviously critical to the dialogue, unless it's just a sage on the stage approach, which hopefully it's not. There are opportunities for interaction with the audience, and you need to capture that audio as well.
Definitely. Another big consideration, especially if you're broadcasting worship services and that kind of thing, is copyright issues. Mm-hmm. So before you dive in, you need to spend some time understanding that it's not just willy-nilly anything can go on the web, but you need to have proper copyright permissions in place. In particular, songs, video or images that are projected during the service, all of those kind of things have copyright associated. Probably the easiest thing to podcast or broadcast is the sermon, because typically the pastor has the copyright. Right. He wrote that sermon himself. And, to be able to put that up on the web is reasonable. He's willing to share that without any copyright concerns or whatever. But once you get past that one 20-minute segment of your service and start broadcasting the entire service, then you need to make sure you have proper copyright licensing in place. And there's some great resources to share with you on that front.
Yep. There was, I think, a lot of confusion when live streaming first kind of burst on the scene, where, some were saying, well, because this is, real time, do we really need copyright? Isn't it the same as being there? But it became clear, not too long ago, I guess, that this is something that copyright applies to. The good news is it's fairly easy to purchase licenses to cover broadcast or podcasting scenarios. So CCLI and OneLicense.net are very familiar to churches, especially who secure licenses through them for printed material, especially. But they also have little modules that you can add on, and you know, maybe not so little. They're sometimes they're, you know, equal in price or half the price, something like that, of the full license, just to keep yourself covered. And then you have reporting requirements, just like you have for anything else too. So you're gonna, we could spend a lot of time on just copyright, Sally, but we've in the book put a couple links to some great resources there. So you just need to get smart. Don't go into this thinking, well, you know, I think I'm okay. You want to make sure that you get a little bit smarter on copyright and make sure that you're covered.
So you've got the equipment in place. You've got the ad-free channel to do it on. You've covered your bases for copyright. What is this great content that you're going to broadcast, Martin?
And really, it's anything. And if you've decided that a live audience is viable for a particular event, then really anything. So it could be a worship service, Bible study, confirmation, you know, any ceremony, a concert, recital, the school chapel service, like our school has a every week chapel service, 15 minutes, great thing to share with parents who aren't there. A school play, graduation, sporting events. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. There's always things going on that are maybe available or a candidate for a live stream.
Yeah, as you were reciting that list, one popped to mind that maybe you wouldn't think would be a good candidate, but I've actually live streamed funeral services before. We had someone who had a grandson in Australia who could not make it to a funeral, and they were very thankful and appreciative that we could allow him to be there for his grandmother's funeral in that way. Yeah. So you never know.
Anytime where there's maybe extended family or family that can't be there. So baptisms, you know, weddings, you know, confirmations, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, good, a built-in audience there.
And I have a little story to tell about live streaming. We were fortunate here in Sleepy Eye to have our entire missionary team in Mexico join us for live streaming of our worship for about 6 months. You guys may recall in the history of the mission work in Mexico that a few years ago they relocated to León, Mexico. So they had a brand new location. They didn't have a church established yet. It was just a group, a core group of missionaries there. And they would actually gather in one of the missionary homes and join us each week. And they wrote to us and told us they were doing this and everything. But what was wonderful was they helped us get our live streaming a lot better, because they would say, you know, it'd be really great if we had your bulletin to look at. Oh, that's a good idea. We produce a bulletin. We could put that, a link to that on that live streaming page, make it easy for people that are watching to grab the bulletin and follow along. And when I say bulletin, I mean like our worship folder with the hymns and things like that. You know, it would be great at the beginning of the service, Sally, if you focused on the hymn board before the service started, so we could see all the hymns, because, you know, in the camera work, we don't typically focus on the hymn board. But now at the beginning, we always have our camera sitting on the hymn board while all the pre-service music is playing and things like that. So if people are getting ready to worship and they don't have the bulletin available or whatever, at least they have an idea of what to expect in our worship. So those little tips helped us kind of refine the actual page where we embed our live streaming feed. We put our service times there. If we have special services coming up, we list them there so people that are tuning in can prepare for some special events that may be live streamed. And then we always have those links to worship folders and things. And those are the kind of things you need to think through for your audience, what to provide them. Finally, someone said it'd be nice if you had a way to give you feedback.
Right.
And we don't have a particular form or anything. We just have a link easy enough to email us. But you could do that a lot of ways. If you're doing it on a page that has commenting built in, people could comment, you could invite them to sign a guest book, all of those different kind of things. Just a feedback loop is nice.
Yep, absolutely. So lots of considerations. Please take a look at this chapter in the book. Again, the book is a work in progress. So if you have things to add that we have neglected, and those of you live streaming veterans, I'm sure maybe have some things that we haven't thought of, please share those, and we will be sure to put them in the book.
Definitely.
All right, Sally, let's move along to the next segment of the show, which in our abbreviated summer series is straight to picks of the week. What's your pick this week?
Well, I'm going to share my screen.
Sounds delicious, this one.
For those watching. Yeah, it's actually called S'more, like the campfire treat. So I thought that was appropriate for summertime. Actually, I debated. I thought about making my Weber grill my pick of the week because we are enjoying that and making s'mores out there. But no, this website is called S'more, S-M-O-R-E.com. And it allows you to create some really graphically pleasing single web pages to advertise an event or something that you want to just promote. It's really easy to do. It's free to do. I created one for our Wells Tech camp, which is coming up on September 14th. And what was really neat about it was it recognized that I had an Eventbrite page for registration and pulled in all the information for me from that page and gave me a starting point on my Wells Tech camp, pulled in a map and everything. So there's lots of different widgets you can add to your page. And basically this becomes just a standalone page that you can use for advertising. So I could send out the link to this page just to have kind of an infographic feel to promoting our event. And again, free to do, but it is advertising supported. So if you want to get rid of that, you can pay for their pro account and have S'more upgraded and use it that way. I think for just one-time events, maybe this is just another way to create something without hiring a graphic designer and paying mm-hmm. some extra fees, but having a nice presentation of your webpage to share with folks. So check out s'more.com. And if you create an event flyer, as they call it, webpage, then be sure to share it with us. We'd love to share it with the Wells Tech community.
Looks cool. Looks easy, which is
it is.
Two of those together are a nice combination.
Definitely.
Okay, great. All right, Sally, my pick is called, it's a piece of software called Super Anti Spyware. And I would say it's not the most beautiful web page and software package in the world, but it is very effective. It is actually what we install on all of the machines here in the Senate offices to remove spyware. Your general tools that come along with your system, Microsoft Security Essentials, even things like AVG, you know, only do so much. This one really just looks for spyware that somehow creeps into your system. It'll look for cookies that you can remove. It's super easy to set up. It's free. There's a free version. There's also a premium version. And that is kind of one of the annoyances of it. When you install it, you have to be very careful that you're not clicking on their free trial or clicking on a button that says, you know, try premium features. You really don't need them. I mean, you can try them if you want. But we found that just the software itself is good enough. It is been recommended by folks like CNET and download.com and NBC and, you know, a bunch of other folks that know what they're talking about. It provides real-time protection, so it'll actually scan things as they're coming into your system, as you're downloading files or downloading applications, as you're opening up email attachments, those kinds of things. And it really is ugly, but very, very effective. So if you're looking for a spyware package, Super Anti-Spyware is my pick of the week and recommendation for those of you that want that little extra protection that maybe something like AVG or Security Essentials does not provide. It has an online database that it updates on a regular basis so that you're catching the latest and greatest spyware that may be on your system. I will say it is for Windows only, not for Mac at this point, but I know a majority of our listeners are Windows users. So this is a great thing to put on the computers of all your faculty members. If your kids have computers in the classroom, you know, it should be on there as well if they're using Windows machines. Church office, you know, just to protect yourself with this kind of software. There's really no downside to it since it's free.
And you use this not as a standalone, but in conjunction then with other virus protections, Martin?
Yes. Okay. Well, yeah, we in this in the in the office, we use another package for antivirus. This okay. is just anti-spyware. So there is a difference.
Okay. Very good. Great recommendation.
All right, let's move along. We already talked about the 300th episode, and we briefly touched on Wells Tech Camp. Again, September 14th at Martin Luther College. We've got some great giveaways. One of the best things about the whole camp is that it in and of itself is a giveaway. It's totally free. Just come ready to talk and to listen and to learn. I'm really looking forward to this day in New Ulm.
Definitely. And our registrations are coming in. So you want to be a part of this. There's going to be a great group there. We only have 59 days to go until the big event. So be sure to join us.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Sally, community feedback this week.
We do have some community feedback. Let me do a quick screen share. And we're going to start with a couple of DIGO links. First of all, from Gail Potratz at Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin. Gail is one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents, always on the cutting edge and up to date on different technology initiatives. And she shared a link from educatorstechnology.com website. This is a new one to me, Martin, and I think I'll be diving in and looking at more of the information they have on this website. It looks really great. This particular article is called 8 Things Kids Should Be Able to Do with Technology, and it's kind of done in an infographic or almost like a Instagram picture kind of look. It says, what do you want kids to do with technology? And it has the list of wrong answers and right answers.
First one is make prezzies.
Yeah.
The wrong answers.
Wrong answers is more focused on the tools. Make prezzies, mm-hmm. start blogs, create Wordles, publish
animotos.
Yeah.
Yes.
So use whiteboards, develop apps. Instead, the right answers are more focused on actions like raise awareness, start conversations, find answers to their questions, change minds, make a difference, take action, drive change. So I think that's definitely a shift. And we as educators have to consciously take it past the tools into applying it and helping students develop their own skills to do these kind of things, to find the answers they're yep. looking for. So great infographic. Gail also mentioned when she tagged it on DIGO and that there are also links to other great infographics at the bottom. There's another awesome technology integration rubric for teachers, a must-have technology integration matrix for teachers, awesome chart featuring 4 mindsets towards learning. So this looks like a really good website, and I think I can spend some time here, and maybe our listeners do want to spend time here as well. Check it out at educatorstechnology.com.
Cool.
Thanks, Gail, for
Thank
the link.
Thank you, Gail. Yep, absolutely.
And the next thing I want to talk about is thanks to our friend Cindy Krieger, who's from Shepherd of the Hills in Lansing, Michigan. And Cindy is over there working hard for the state of Michigan, doing all kinds of mobile app development, she told me lately. That's what she's been real involved in. Cindy is a Wells Tech follower, and she wrote to me because not too long ago I'd shared something from Google Chrome about multitasking, where you had 2 mouse inputs working at the same time. It was kind of done humorously. But she wrote to me about Doug Engelbart, who recently passed away.
The inventor of the mouse, right?
Right, the inventor of the mouse and a real pioneer in technology. And she sent me a link to an article that led me to this site at Stanford that kind of tells some of the history behind the invention of the mouse. And it gives you clips from what they called the mother of all demos, where in 1968, Doug demonstrated his future at the time and our current reality with hyperlinked web pages, basically, and using the mouse and that kind of thing. The reason that Cindy in particular wanted to share this was because as part of this demonstration, he also demonstrated something he called a corded keypad. And he used a 5-finger keypad to be able to type all the letters of the alphabet, basically kind of with binary combinations. Mm. So two-finger combinations, three-finger combinations.
It sounds like something Kevin would like.
Yeah, it was very uber geeky and cool beyond measure. And his idea behind having this one-handed keypad was you'd never have to take your hand off the mouse. So you keep one hand on your keyboard and one hand on your mouse at all times, and that would make you a lot more efficient. So for those interested in a little bit of computer history, this is just an amazing demonstration. He gets into a lot more in the process, and I just really appreciate Cindy sharing this with me. So, all right. Last up in community feedback, we heard from Steve Brown, who's a blogger over at Worship Ideas You Can Use, and he sent us a link. I'm wondering which one of these. I'm going to skip that one, to something on the Worship Together blog called Ministry and Social Media. And basically it was cautioning you about what you use social media for. Mm-hmm. And this is probably more about personal ministry. Also, obviously, public ministers need to be concerned with these things. But even you as a Christian, and it's five simple tips, and I just want to kind of read through the list from this blog post. Number one is a post informative, encouraging, or funny at your own expense. If it doesn't fall into one of these categories, you should think twice before hitting post. I'm often shocked at how negative Christians can be online. I think that's a good consideration. Mm-hmm. Number two is the post bragging about myself, who I'm hanging out with, my church, my pastor, my wife, my kids, or whatever. And it kind of just reminds you there are people struggling and having marital problems or heartbroken with a wayward child, and your bragging post is maybe going to heap discouragement on their heads instead of encouraging them.
Yep.
Number three is the post informational. Is there a better way to communicate the information than a social network? There's no reason to post on Twitter reminding six people about rehearsal tonight. You should just text or email them for this. Number four, what would someone outside of Christ say about your Twitter feed? If your posts are often controversial or opinionated, you're giving non-believers ammo to lump all followers of Jesus into the same category as you. The best forum for sharing your opinion on heavy matters over a beverage of choice, not in the public arena. And then finally, it says, what would Jesus post? WWJP. This sounds cheesy, but honestly, if Jesus wouldn't say it, we shouldn't either. Jesus told us to be salt and light in the world. We're bringing life and light to a dark world, not add to what's already broken.
Yep, so, as ambassadors. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really well done, and some food for thought there. And I realized I skipped one more link. This is one that I'd shared called Why Chromebooks Should Rule the School. And I think a real balanced look at the differences between different platforms for one-to-one computing in classrooms, and some of the real advantages that Chromebooks have. And honestly, you know, looking at it, some of the disadvantages are pulled out there too, but why Chromebooks have kind of a leg up in the one-to-one arena. So yep. A good read if you're considering Chromebooks or want someone on your school board to consider Chromebooks or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So.
Follow-up to Google Summit, still exploring the Chromebook experiment?
Yeah, I actually wrapped up, and I should include a link. I promised that I would include a link to my Going Google website. I don't have that up right now, but I'll throw a link in the show notes, and maybe we can look at that next week as well. But
cool.
Yeah, I am more and more convinced that these are just awesome little tools.
Great educational tools.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'd love to learn more and be able to share more with everyone. So maybe I'll do some additional Google Chromebooking. You never know.
Chromebooking, yes. That's it for listener feedback. We would love to have your feedback as well. And there's plenty of ways to do that. First of all, just make sure you bookmark wellstech.wells.net, because everything we discuss on the show is there somewhere. So that is a, as Sally would say, a treasure trove of great material. It's our brain, so to speak. So you don't have to furiously write all this stuff down as you're listening or jogging or whatever. You know, you can always go back to that site. But that's also the place you can go to find out how to connect with us. So our email address, wellstech@wells.net. There's a little link on the right side of the page on that site where you can leave us a voicemail. There is Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, Digo, Pinterest. Haven't had a Pinterest in a while, Sally. So we look forward to those different ways to listen to the show. That's the place to go if you want to share something with us, give us feedback. We would love to hear from you. The more feedback we have, the better the show goes, in my opinion. So please take advantage of that. Sally, what is next week's chapter in our ongoing book?
Well, next week we're going to shift gears a bit and talk about embeddable content, and we'll be doing that for several weeks because one of the big advantages you have on many websites today is being able to embed content or bring it in from other places. So we're going to focus on pictures, calendars, and other things next week and give you ideas for embedding those on your websites.
Great. Mm-hmm. Tune in then for episode 299.
Party right. Like it's 299, huh?
That's right. Let's close the show with the music of Michael Schrader, Just As I Am. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Just as I am, without one plea, but that your blood was shed for me, and that you ask me to come to thee, O Lamb of God, I come. Just as I am, and waiting not to rid my soul of one dark plot, to you whose blood can cleanse each spot, O Lamb of God, I come. Just as I am, you take me, for by your grace I believe. Just as I am, you forgive me, for all that you are is all I am not. So you paid the price to save me, just as I am. Just as I am, you will receive, will welcome, pardon, cleanse, relief, because your promise I believe, O Lamb of God, I come. All I am not, so you pay the price to save me, just as I am. Just as I am, your love unknown has broken every barrier down. Now to yours alone, O Lamb of God, I come. Just as I am, you take me, for by your grace I believe. Just as I am, you forgive me, for all that you are is You paid the price to save me, just as I am. Just as I am.